up, everybody? Welcome to the NCAA show brought to you by 265 Media. I am the founder of 265 Media, Daniel Artes. I am here with KDOT. I'm also here with Asher. We're going to get into it, man. We're going to talk about the national championship games from both the men's and women's bracket. Stanford won a tough game versus Arizona, 54-53 in the game that came down to the final shot. Also, on the men's side of things, Baylor beats Gonzaga 86-70, surprisingly, to win their first ever national championship, ending Gonzaga's hopes to become the first team to run the table undefeated since 1976. And Asher, I know that, you know, I mean, you had Gonzaga going all the way and everything. We all agreed that Gonzaga was going to win it on the last show that we did. So before we really jump into it, man, like, how y'all doing tonight, man? How y'all doing?
I was terrible last night. I was terrible, man. I'm not going to lie. I was terrible because I had to go on the Twitter monster and then see just the ridiculous stuff I've seen for 5 years, man. Just the people that don't watch this sport just ripping Gonzaga apart for what was 40 bad minutes of basketball, but I really think, and we'll talk about this later when we get to it, but I really think it was 4 bad minutes of basketball that was their entire season. I think it was 4 minutes. And we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that later. But to see such a small sample size define so many games and so many triumphs over a year and over the last 5 years for the best program in this sport, and it's not even close. They're the best program in the sport right now. They're the preseason number one. But to see it all go down like that was sad for me.
Yeah, I agree. And Kata, what was your thoughts on that national championship game before we really jump into this podcast?
Yeah, it was the same for me, man. I was really, really surprised at what happened, with Baylor coming out of the woodworks against Houston on Saturday. You know, I kind of had a feeling that they were coming in confident because, you know, the whole narrative was, you know, Gonzaga could arguably be, you know, the greatest team since that Hoosiers team back in the 70s. And, you know, I think they came in with a chip on their shoulder and, you know, they proved it. So, you know, I was surprised, but, you know, I'm not going to, you know, discredit Baylor. Congrats to them on an amazing season. And, you know, it was just a great display of determination and heart from Baylor and getting it done early and getting it over with. So that's really all I can say about my feelings on the game. Definitely congrats to Baylor and also congrats to Gonzaga on an incredible season. Just like Asher said, he analyzes it as 4 minutes of something that changed the entire game. And I could definitely agree with that. Congrats to both teams, but especially Baylor on winning the national championship.
Exactly. And everybody, please don't forget to follow all the podcasts underneath the 265 Media umbrella. That's the NBA show, the NCAA show, the WNBA show, Hoopers Unhealed, the Daniel Artes podcast. We have mad podcasts underneath there, man. So we're going to jump right into it and talk about this Stanford versus Arizona game, you know, with the ladies. And, you know, this game was amazing. And Arizona has so much fight in them. And Stanford looks like is getting control of the game. And then all of a sudden, Arizona is back in it. KDOT, what was your thoughts, you know, on this national championship game?
So for me, it was definitely a David versus Goliath type situation. You could have clearly seen that with Stanford's size and then versus Arizona's speed. It was definitely a game worth watching. What intrigued me is that Arizona, of course, has just been such a relentless team all year long and all throughout the tournament. They could have easily, you know, bowed down when Stanford went up. I think it was like 11 points. They went on a quick run, but they were able to be relentless. They were able to persevere. And the funniest stat of the night for me is Arizona getting 12 steals to Stanford's 1 steal and Stanford's 21 total turnovers to Arizona's 6. and Stanford still won the game. That's incredible. One thing that you could kind of say that could have been definitely a big disparity would be, of course, the obvious, the rebounding. Stanford had 47 rebounds to Arizona's 29. But I mean, if you watch the game, I mean, you could kind of see where the rebounding was at an advantage for Stanford. But again, just the relentlessness and the perseverance of Arizona not giving up, and for it to come down to that final play at the end, I mean, it was an incredible thing to watch. What do you think, Asher, about the game Sunday night?
And I agree with everything you said about the box score, kind of outliers, the weird things in that box score, for sure. And it was a weird game. It was a great game, don't get me wrong, but it was sort of one of those weird championship games where it felt like everyone was nervous. Everyone was missing shots they usually make on both sides. There were some weird turnovers for sure, but it was Arizona's ball pressure, I thought, that got in the back of the game. It was that hounding full court pressure with Stanford's guards bringing it up that really turned the tide, and Arizona scoring in transition off of those turnovers really helped them a lot in terms of getting back into it. Ari McDonald didn't have her usual game, right? 5 of 21 from the field. And I wonder how much playing a team a third time played into that, because of how many of these teams had never played Ari McDonald. And there is nobody like her in the country, right? So if you've played her none in the regular season and you play her once in the tournament in a one-and-done situation, it's a little different than it being your third go-around playing her, you know, knowing your tendencies. It's like if you go to the park and you play someone and they just kill you, right? And you've never played in them before, and they just, you can't stop them, versus having a scouting report for like four games before that of knowing exactly what they do well, what they don't do well, and then guarding them, right? Like it's a whole different ball game when you've played her multiple times. And so that played a part into it. Listen, she still fought, and that team still fought like crazy, as they did all year. And they had every chance to win it. And I do want to talk about that last play, because I was a little conflicted on it myself. And I just didn't really know how to fully process it, because the immediate thing I saw from a lot of NBA writers on Twitter and a bunch of guys that don't really necessarily cover women's basketball, but those are the guys that are on my, you know, feed coming up, whatever, the bigger writers of basketball in general. The first thing they were saying was, right, how terrible of a shot that was, a fadeaway jumper over three people, and how what in the world did Arizona draw up? What did Adia Barnes draw up? What in the world was going on in that last play? And I personally just didn't see it that way. So I did want to let, I guess, KDOT, Daniel, if you want to chime in on it, but KDOT, your thoughts on that last play before I get into mine, because I'm curious as to what you think about it.
I mean, listen, we all knew Ari was getting that ball. Is it Ari or Ari? I don't want to mess up KDOT. What is it?
It's Ari.
So we knew Ari was getting the ball on that final play. You know what I mean? I just think that when Stanford turned the defense up for those final six seconds right there, you know, I mean, she still had a decent look. The shot could have fell in, you know, but when you're looking at the play, you know, Baptiste was wide open in the corner. I don't think she saw it though. You know what I mean? So, you know, KDOT, like, I think that you had some issues with the play, maybe call a timeout or something like that. Like, what you thought about that final play, breaking it down?
Yeah, Ari is the best player on Arizona's team. You have to allow her to take that last shot. I didn't have a problem with her taking that last shot. And just like you said, DA, she had an opportunity for that shot to go in. It just missed off left. That's literally what it did, off the back rim, off left. But what I was curious to know is Arizona had a timeout. And I was curious to know that if you're in a full quarter setting and if you're treating it sort of like the pros, you know, if I was Adia, and I don't know what she was thinking at that point, you know, why not call a timeout just to see what type of defensive setup Stanford was in, and then maybe draw up something differently. And then the second thing is, what I saw live is I asked, well, why didn't we go dribble handoff action right there? And somebody else pointed out the idea of Airy actually taking the ball out to get away from the double team, which made sense. So if you go a DHO action with Airy taking the ball out, there's no way Stanford can double team with 6.1 seconds left. It could be a situation where Airy drives to the basket, into the paint. It can also get to a point where Airy hits a wide open three off of the DHO screen. It could be a case where it's sort of like a pseudo type of read option where whoever's, you know, handing off the ball, if they bite on Airy, she gets open, she ends up, you know, going for a shot. Or if they focus on the person who has the ball, then she passes it off to Airy and Airy makes the play. But there were so many different, you know, situations and scenarios that we could talk about, that we could think about. And I was just putting my coaching hat on at that point. But of course, we don't know what was in Adia's head. We didn't know what she drew up. But at the end of the day, you know, I can live with the end result with Airy having a ball in her hand and possibly, you know, making that shot. But ultimately, she missed it. And yeah, she did have, it was either Baptiste or Yane in the corner. But another thing that you mentioned with Baptiste or Yane in that corner there, you know, I feel like if they would have cut to the basket, maybe Airy probably could have saw something. But I mean, when you got Lexi Hall, Anna Wilson, and Cameron Brink just towering above you, it's close to impossible to know what's going on as far as making a decent pass. So that's what I thought about it. That's something that I actually posted on Twitter. And somebody actually posted a picture, but you know, pictures are worth 1,000 words, and anything could happen in that scenario. I mean, we had Haley on the strong side. She could have easily rotated, no matter how open Ganey or Baptiste was in that corner. Even if they would have cut, she could have easily rotated. So we don't know what the end results of that final play could have been, even if I brought up this this whole scenario. But at the end of the day, you know, it was in Aries' hands. She threw up a shot, and I felt like she got a clean look, even though she did have three Stanford defenders in front of her, and it just missed off left. And you know, you got to live with that result. And congratulations to Stanford on an incredible season and winning the national championship.
Yeah. Before I let you go, Asher, it's kind of hard to like fault Ari, you know what I mean? Because, you know, she carried the team on her back, man. You know what I mean? Getting there. You got to think about it. She was averaging about 30 over the last three games and stuff. You know what I mean? Over the entire tournament, you know, she was the most important player for any team, whoever she went up against. She's averaging 25 during this NCAA tournament run. You know what I mean? 14 steals too as well. You know, think about the respect the other team gave her, you know what I mean, on that final play by just hounding her like that, man. It's like, it's kind of tough. Like she had to take that shot, even if she didn't pass it, man. I was even saying it watching the game. I'm like, I was like, don't pass the ball, Ari. You know what I'm saying? Please do not pass this ball. This is your moment right here. Win or lose, make or miss. You know what I mean? I'd rather the ball in your hands and everything. Asher, what was your thoughts on that play?
Yeah, if we're talking about, this might sound crazy and it might go against a lot of normal basketball, but if we're talking about a fadeaway three, like turnaround three, I don't know if you call that a fadeaway. It was like a turnaround fader three for Airy versus an open three in the corner for that shooter. I'd rather have Airy taking that fadeaway three. But I will say this, but there were two things I had a problem with on the play. The first one was I thought that when Airy had the catch off the initial inbounds pass, that was a really tough place to catch it. It was like near half court. She kind of bobbled it a little bit. That's when I would have used my second timeout right away. I would have used that timeout on the catch. So I thought that made the whole play really difficult in general for her based on that catch. And Stanford did a really good job of hounding the ball handler, of hounding and denying the inbounds pass. And it was tough to get inbounds. I would have called that timeout right there, right away. You know, that's 5 seconds left, same position, just hopefully a better inbounds pass the next time. And the second thing is, like Kate had already said, I would have wanted that right corner shooter to cut to the rim and make herself available for Ari to see. I think it would have been easier to see, much easier to see, if she's diving to the rim there. And yes, I did notice Haley Jones on that opposite block that could have absolutely shifted over and made a play, made a winning defensive play. But I would have taken my chances with that shooter cutting to the rim with about 3 seconds left, having a chance at an open look at the rim. But if we're talking about a corner three or wide open, like wide open, or Ari taking that fadeaway, I'm sorry, I'm taking Ari taking a fadeaway. That's just who she's been all tournament.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you got to ride with your horse, man. And speaking of Haley Jones, man, like how big was she, you know, during this run, especially in the Final Four in the national championship game? You know, she scored 41 combined points on 19 for 28 shooting from the field. You know, as deep as the roster that Stanford had, Haley was just as a big part of this championship run, man. Her play was like really important. And I know that she has some motivation, you know, being the number one recruit in the class of 2019, you know what I mean? But she had a knee injury that kind of messed up her freshman year. She only played 18 games in, you know what I mean? Then, you know, obviously, you know, COVID and stuff happened, you know what I'm saying? There's nothing to play for right now, right? But now, you know what I mean? She's back sophomore year, Final Four, most outstanding player, man. Like what I like about her game is that, you know, she's a hooper, man. She's dangerous close to the basket. But if you leave her open for jumpers, she'll make you pay. She's not a strong three-point shooter, but she'll hit them. But she'll definitely make you pay from that mid-range jump shot, as we've seen in the semifinal game when she hit the go-ahead shot, you know. And it looked like when Arizona was, you know, storming back, you know, it just looked like just Haley Jones was the only Stanford player that could really create her own shot. You know what I mean? Kiana Williams, you know what I mean? The senior, she was struggling. But, you know, Haley Jones in that fourth quarter, you know, she scored 7 points. She took over the game, scored 7 of the 11 points and stuff. And, you know, talk about Haley Jones, Asher, like what you thought about her big-time performance during that national semifinals and final.
That and one was the moment, right? That creating that and one to put her team up in the final minute and a half, that was the moment right there to put them up 3, I want to say, at that point, before the free throw. So that was the moment of the game that I remember for Stanford was that bucket. And like you said, she created that bucket herself. That was her creating a play, finishing through contact. And she has so many different skills that work. And I feel like that's one of the things that a lot of these Stanford players have is they're not just great at one thing. They're good at a lot of things. And none of them really necessarily stand out doing, you know, this amazingly well or that amazingly well. They're not specialists. They sort of all have a wide variety of skills. Yeah. And it works really well as a team when you have so many people that can do so many things well. They all pass well, it seems like.
Yeah.
They don't all shoot well from the perimeter, but most of them do. They all at least are decent, you know, 10 feet in, whether driving to the rim, finishing inside, all good finishers, all good passers, and all locked in defensively together on a string. So I think Haley Jones was the best player on the floor in that national championship game. I think she was the best player in the Final Four, not named Ari McDonald. And she proved why she was the number one player in the nation, right? Creating her own offense at the end of the game, taking over and taking that moment.
Yeah, exactly. And like you said, that big end one was pivotal because think about it. It was 50-53. Arizona was winning. No, I'm sorry. It was 51-53. Yeah, 51. It was 51.
It was 51-50. Yeah. It was 51-50. And Stanford was up.
Yeah, Stanford was up. And you got to think about this. Haley Jones scored the final points of that game for her team, both games, the national semifinals and the national finals, man. Like her efforts, man, you know what I'm saying, was tremendous. And I really enjoyed, you know, how she played. Kate, what's your thoughts, brother?
So, of course, you already know I'm getting ready to put the skill development hat on.
Mm-hmm.
What do I always say? Paint touches.
Mm-hmm.
Paint touches, paint touches, paint touches. It doesn't matter what you do in the paint, whether you're passing it out to an open three, whether you're floating it up, or whether you're dumping it to your big man down low. As long as you have paint touches, there's a high percentage that you're going to make the right play and you're going to score. So with Haley, I mean, let's just quickly talk about that play when Stanford was up 51-50 and Haley gets the ball on the left side. She comes through with she dribbles left, she goes into a patented spin move into the paint. She gets swiped, gets the foul call and one. I mean, she's been doing that all tournament long. I mean, she's been able to stay within the mid range, either catching it out on the extended wing or even catching it sometimes in the pinch post and going in her reverse pivot and just going directly to the basket. You can't leave her open all the time because she will hit that jump shot, and she will on occasions hit the three. But she was the most important person on the floor, very versatile player at 6'1". She just did it all. And in both games, she proved why, you know, she was the number one, you know, recruit in 2019. And what's impressive to me with Haley is that she's very poised. You know, it was nothing within the moment that made her nervous. There was nothing within the moment that made her crack. I mean, she put the team on her back. I really, really thought that Kiana Williams was going to have a breakout game in the national championship game, but again, she struggled. And in comes Haley Jones, you know, saving the day. And I hate to say it in that term, but it did feel in some way that that being the case. And I can't say, you know, enough good things about Haley because, you know, she has shown, you know, why she's you know, why she was the best player, you know, in the Final Four. And, you know, going back to, you know, her abilities offensively, but let's talk about her abilities defensively. Let's talk about her help side defense. I mean, of course, you got Caitlin and Lexi, you know, manning, you know, the blocks and, you know, blocking shots. But on the perimeter, it was Haley and Anna that was really communicating and making sure that they had the right switches, making sure that help side was there if they were beat. I mean, it was just an amazing thing to see. And just like on that very final play, I feel that even if there was a cutter, you know, Haley would have made the right decision and rotated correctly. She's been doing it all tournament long, and she was doing it, within the Final Four in the national championship game. That's one thing that stuck out to me about Haley. And, you know, she's going to have an incredible career at Stanford. And, you know, can't wait to see, you know, what else she has in store.
Yeah, I agree. I think Stanford, man, I know that, you know, South Carolina has a crazy recruiting class coming in. UConn has their whole team coming back, plus another crazy recruiting class coming in as well. But I love what Stanford has, you know, going forward with, you know, our favorite players, Ashton Pretchell. You know what I mean? I call her the female Porzingis. You know what I'm saying? With what she be doing from three, blocking shots and everything as well. You know, and also Cameron Brink, too. She showed me a lot. I think in the national semifinal game, she had 6 points and six blocks against South Carolina. And then in the championship game, she had 10 points, six rebounds, three blocks. I think that, like, you know, going forward, this team has a lot of players, man, that's definitely going to be something. And then also with Haley Jones, man, you know, in the fold too as well. Like, Stanford they're going to be tough. You know what I mean? I don't know if they're going to repeat next year because, as you know, what happened, how they beat, you know, South Carolina, and, you know, with that team and what they got coming next year, with UConn getting Azzy Fudd, you know what I'm saying, you know, next season. Like, I don't know. It's going to be tough, but I think, you know, Stanford is definitely going to be formidable as well, you know, going forward and stuff. So, with that being said, let's move on to the men's bracket, man. We already know what happened.
Do we have to? Do I talk about this game?
I mean, we don't have to talk about the game. We can just show love to the ladies. It's no big deal, man. Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
I gotta have a therapy session for myself. Yeah.
This is your therapy session right here, brother. So, all right. All right. Listen, man. Let's get into this men's bracket real quick. So, you know, we already know what happened. Baylor blew out Gonzaga, 86-70. Gonzaga looked like they didn't want to play. They came to play, but maybe they was 4 minutes too late, like you said, Asher. You know what I'm saying? You saying like the first, you know, 4 minutes of this game really was the game right there and stuff. So like, you know, we'll let you get your therapy session on right here on the NCAA show, brought to you by 265 Media and stuff. And we'll let you have the floor to, you know, talk about, you know, your Gonzaga team against this Baylor team.
Yeah, so I'm glad to have this platform on the NCAA show to talk about this, to get some of this stuff on my chest. I'm a Pepperdine basketball fan. They play in the West Coast Conference. They play with Gonzaga. So I'll preface this by saying I'm not a Gonzaga fan, but the reason I pull for Gonzaga when it comes to tournament time and when it comes to March is because I respect so much how great the Hoopers are in the West Coast Conference. And I feel like whenever Gonzaga loses, the immediate reaction of everybody is to discredit the conference they play in. And they play in one of the best conferences in college basketball. No, it's not the Big Ten. No, it's not the Big 12. No, it's not the Pac 12. No, it's not that deep. But at the top, it is as good as any of those conferences. The best players in those conferences will be the best players in the WCC. The best players in the WCC will be the best players in the Big 12 and the best players in the Big 10. At the top, it is as good as any conference in America. So that's one of the reasons I defend Gonzaga as I do. The first 4 minutes decided this game. They were down 11-1. This Zags team has been punched in the mouth a lot before this season. And I think people thought they had just steamrolled everybody. And that's usually what the final score looked like. But there have been many games this year where they've started slow. Many. Especially in WCC play. BYU was the number one game where they really started slow. BYU couldn't miss. They were down 12 at halftime in the WCC championship game. And then Jalen Suggs took over in the final 8 minutes. But Gonzaga had been there before. But they hadn't been there against a team like Baylor. Baylor, all year, is the number two team in the country. It was always 1-2 and then everybody else. I think we sometimes forget that. It was always these two above everyone else, and those two should meet in the championship game, and they did. It was never Gonzaga was way better than Baylor. That was never. I never said that one time. It was always Gonzaga and Baylor were the clear two best, but I thought Gonzaga was the clear one, Baylor was the clear two. That clearly has to be flipped, right? Like I can't say that can't be flipped. Like it has to be flipped at this point. And everyone else was just playing for third place. That was how we all felt all year. Gonzaga lost this game in 4 minutes. It was 11-1, and it was mental. They were absolutely destroyed in 4 minutes, and they mentally never recovered. Baylor was in their jerseys in the first 4 minutes. They wanted it, simply wanted that game more than Gonzaga did for 4 minutes, and that's all it took. At the half, it was a 10-point game. They essentially tied in the last 16 minutes of the half. Gonzaga's the more explosive basketball team. I felt like Baylor played the better 16 minutes in the last 16 minutes and of that first half, and yet the game was tied. If you just look at those 16 minutes. But because of those first four, Gonzaga never had their footing, never found themselves. Baylor took it to them early, and that was the difference in this game. Jalen Suggs' two fouls didn't help. Drew Timmy really struggled. Corey Kispert looked hurt to me. He did not look healthy. I don't know. That's speculating. But he was not moving well at all. Give Baylor some credit on defense for sure for that, for getting into him on the drive. But this was really, really sad from the best team I've ever seen in college basketball. In my 15 years of watching the sport, they were the best. And this was not the way I wanted them to go out. But it happens. It's 40 minutes. It's why national championships in college basketball don't mean what championships in other sports mean. They just don't. A six-game tournament, single elimination, to win six games in a row, single elimination, is not winning a seven-game series. It's just a whole different thing.
Exactly.
And it doesn't discredit you. It doesn't discredit this Gonzaga team. It was the best run I've ever seen a team make in my years of watching this sport, and they had four disastrous minutes that changed their season against the only other team all year that we thought could possibly match them. That's what happened.
The great thing about basketball, man, that's why I love basketball so much, y'all. Guys, I love basketball so much because you can't cheat the grind, man. Like, anybody can lose on any given night, anytime, anywhere, home, away, neutral site. It doesn't matter, man. Like, you got to be ready. And that's the beauty of the game. Yeah, you know, Gonzaga, like, they lost the game and stuff. But, you know, at the same time, like, on Baylor's end, like, Baylor came out ready to go. You know, you got, you know, the dudes like, you know, Davion Mitchell and stuff. I like the big men, how they was playing. Like, they really focused on playing physical with Timmy. You know what I'm saying? I'm not going to pronounce his last name because his last name is crazy. I'm from Baylor, the big guy. I guess he's probably from Nigeria. Yeah, I'm not going to even say it. You know what I mean? They really came out. They really came out with an agenda, and they achieved it. And to those, you know, to those fans that want to discredit, you know, Gonzaga's season, like, they can't listen. Gonzaga's 31-1. They lost in the finals and stuff like that. I guess in history, like, this team could have been one of the best teams in history. And that's a complicated thing too, because, you know, they're one of 1991 UNLV, 1999 Duke, 2015 Kentucky. Now, 2021 Gonzaga, the only team pretty much to go, you know, to the NCAA, you know, championship game undefeated and stuff like that. But it's like, damn, they could still be one of the best teams of all time, even though, you know, they lost that one game and stuff, instead of just, you know, winning an entire season. Like, I think that's crazy, man. Kedar, what's your thoughts about, you know, this Gonzaga, you know, Baylor game?
Yeah, for me, I mean, you know, we talked about this in the show prior to, with our Final Four show. You know, we said Gonzaga was going to Gonzaga and Baylor was going to Baylor. And we were going to see those two in the national championship game. And of course, yes, I did pick Gonzaga because I just felt like, you know, from that perspective, Gonzaga would have been able to sustain the incredible force of what Baylor has done all season. But, you know, I was wrong. And along with a lot of other people, which is okay. But one thing that stood out to me was Baylor's incredible shooting. Especially in that in the second half, where Gonzaga went on that run, and I think they cut the lead to maybe about 8 or 9, and then you know, Baylor just came out with Jared Butler and Davion Mitchell just having a barrage of threes just fall, and they went from being up 9 to being up, I believe, 17 at that point. And I think that definitely took the rest of what Gonzaga had as far as a run was concerned out of them. So that was very impressive. Again, when you talk about, you know, as a team, you know, they out-rebounded Gonzaga. I think it was 43-27 or something like that. I have to double check it. It was 38-22. And it was just amazing just to see how bad Baylor wanted to play this game. We have to remember, this game was canceled in the regular season because of Baylor's COVID situation. And they were waiting for this game. I mean, who knows what would have happened if they played that game back in, I believe it was January or February when it was scheduled to play it. So they were waiting for this game. They were waiting for Gonzaga to beat everybody else. And I'm pretty sure Gonzaga was waiting for Baylor to beat everybody else. But ultimately, it got to a point where Baylor just said, you know what, first 4 minutes, let's just smack them in the mouth early, and let's get this championship. And that's exactly what they did. Started off, as Asher said, it was 11-1. And, you know, it was just off to the races from there. Baylor gained their confidence, and Gonzaga was unable to get their confidence, and ultimately Baylor won the game. So, you know, that's what I saw from it. I would say, you know, very impressive, you know, outing by Jared Butler. I mean, he's, you know, clearly has been one of the best players in the country all year, and, you know, he definitely showed that. And then definitely big ups to Davion Mitchell. I mean, come on. It's almost like you're looking at Donovan Mitchell in the mirror, right? But, you know, for him to, you know, have the outstanding games that he had, not only in the national championship game, but also against Houston, you know, it was very incredible, you know, to see that young man thrive and shine the way he did. And again, gotta tilt your hat to Baylor. And, you know, it was an incredible season by both teams. Mark Few shouldn't have anything to hold his head about. Jalen Suggs, the same thing. Drew Timmy, the same thing. You know, they had an incredible season. You know, it just like Asher said, it was that first 4 minutes that really determined and called their season from that standpoint. So, you know, got to win the game. And unfortunately, Gonzaga didn't. And Baylor is holding up the championship trophy. So, you know, overall, I would say this. It was an incredible tournament. An incredible tournament. I mean, we had talks between Oral Roberts doing their thing. Of course, Loyola Chicago doing their thing. You know, and just the idea of them being able to do this in a pandemic was just simply incredible. And I enjoyed it. I'm sure you guys enjoyed it. And, you know, obviously the fans enjoyed it, you know, whether they were in Indianapolis or whether they were, you know, sitting down at their TVs watching it. I mean, it was something to talk about for the past 3 weeks. And I'm talking about both tournaments as well as San Antonio. It was an incredible tournament by the women. We had some controversial, definitely had some controversial moments in the women's game. And I'm talking about from the very first round all the way to the national championship. We didn't talk about that cake ball when we were talking about the women's, but we're just going to leave it at that. But hands down, incredible tournament by both the men and the women's side. And, you know, again, I got to tilt my hat, even though you have some disparities between the men and the women, overall, you know, we were able to watch some great games. It ended up being a success regardless, but I really hope that they, you know, figure out what they need to do as far as investing on the women's side, because that was just, it was inexcusable for it to be, you know, the disparities between what you saw on the men's side and what you saw on the women's side. It was just inexcusable. But like I said, overall, incredible tournament by both the men and the women.
Yeah, I agree, man. It was really fun. I you know what? I'm going to be honest. I had way more fun watching women's basketball tournament than the men's. You know what I mean? Like, especially.
I thought it was a tournament. Yeah.
During the early rounds, you know, when you see Max Asemus, you know what I mean, Oral Roberts, they're doing their thing. It was fun to see that. It was fun to see Loyola Chicago. But, like, as that women's tournament, it turned the tide. And even the social media impact of the women's tournament versus the men, it doubled the men's tournament, man. You know, if you go on, I think it was on Twitter, it was called Zoomf. They do a lot of analytics stuff as far as, like, the social media impact and everything like that. And, you know, like, the women's doubled the men. You know what I mean? From mentions, tweets, everything. You know what I mean? Even impressions and stuff like that too as well. You know what I mean? But it was fun. It was fun seeing a lot of that drama and stuff like that. Like unlike the men, it didn't really have that much drama, you know, except for, you know, Jalen Suggs hitting that ridiculous game-winning shot in the semifinals, man. Like, that was crazy. Because I had UCLA, you know what I mean, beating Gonzaga. And I was right there, man. I was 3 seconds away, man. Stop the ball. That's all they had to do, stop the ball. That's the only thing about college basketball I don't like. They don't really stop the ball. They always want to run back on defense and stuff, stop the ball. And it bit UCLA in the butt and stuff. But overall, I had fun watching the tournament just from the women's side, because I didn't really follow women's basketball like that. I mean, I've watched it, but I didn't really follow the players and everything. And I got introduced to a lot of amazing players and stuff. You know what I mean? Like Caitlin Clark, everybody was speaking about her, and I didn't even know about her. You know what I'm saying? But then I got introduced, you know what I mean, through you two guys. And it was just fun, you know, seeing her play, you know, players like Aaliyah Boston and you know, Zia Cook. And I remember Zia Cook from her only highlight I seen her on social media was when she broke that girl down and did a little reverse layup and stuff like that on Baller's Life. You know what I'm saying? So it was cool. And then, you know, you got Pretchel and you got Brink from Stanford. Like, I love how athletic they are running up and down the court and stuff. And that's why I called Stanford beating South Carolina, because of the athleticism of those two girls, them 2 6-foot-5 girls like that, and the fact that one of them could step out and hit some threes, you know. But it was fun, you know, watching this tournament. I had a blast, and can't wait to, you know, get back into it next year and stuff. What you thinking, Asher?
Yeah, congrats to Baylor. They deserved it last night. They absolutely deserved it. Gonzaga was the best team all year, but Baylor was the best team when it mattered the most. They played their best game last night. I thought it was just an amazing, amazing effort by the three guards that have been great all year outside of that COVID pause and some games after. They've been awesome all year in Jared Butler, Maceo Teague, and Donovan Davion Mitchell. So those three guys have been phenomenal all year. The rebounding was the difference for me too. We haven't talked about that much, but Mark Vital, who is Charles Barkley-esque on the glass with his size, but his ability to get rebounds, not the tallest guy in the room, but a guy that you're not gonna outwork down low at all, ever.
Yeah.
A guy that is happy to have a goose egg in the scoring column and still be one of the most impactful players in the court.
Yeah. And that's all I seen was him. And he only grabbed 11 rebounds. He seemed like he had 30 rebounds yesterday, but he only got 11.
He had important ones, like really important ones. It seemed like every time Gonzaga got a stop they needed, down 10, down 12, got a stop they needed after scoring, Baylor got an offensive rebound. Or Mark Vital specifically got an offensive rebound. He got some really key ones yesterday. And, yeah, like I said, Baylor jumped on Gonzaga with something they hadn't seen. They hadn't seen – because nobody has that level of athletic ability defensively that Baylor has. Nobody in the country has it but them. They jumped on Gonzaga early, and that was that. And if we're looking ahead to next year, I loved both of these tournaments. I thought the women's tournament was also better than the men's tournament, if we're being honest. It definitely wasn't an iconic men's tournament that I'll remember forever. I'll remember the Gonzaga-UCLA game forever, and I'll remember this Baylor team forever. But beyond those two things, probably not going to take a bunch away. Shout out Oregon State, though, Wayne Tinkle. Shout out that team. That was a lot of fun to watch their run. They didn't go away. But next year, man, Gonzaga's preseason number one. Not even close. They're going to be preseason number one. They're going to have the most talent they've ever had. They're going to have 2 5-stars, not one. They're going to have the number one player in college basketball. They've never had that before. So they're starting to recruit like a blue blood. They're going to have Chet Holmgren in all likelihood. He's not locked in yet, but all the signs point to Chet Holmgren going to Gonzaga. And if Chet, the 7-foot unicorn, does go to Gonzaga, it's going to be a whole run it back scenario with Chet and Timmy. And we're going to see UCLA is going to have a great team next year. Baylor's going to be really good next year again. Kansas is going to be back next year for sure. Kentucky will be back next year. You watch, they'll be back next year. But yeah, it's once again going to be Gonzaga's year to lose, and that's going to be fascinating to watch Timmy come back, right, after one of his worst games as a sophomore to come back as a junior. And you know what I noticed yesterday after that game? Did you see the Gonzaga huddle?
Yeah, they was talking. Yeah, they wasn't down about it at all.
It was Drew Timmy.
Yep.
He was the one leading the way in the center of that huddle. I thought that was so interesting because he's the guy next year that's going to come back and lead this team. So I thought that was fascinating to watch him take – over that leadership role. Also, shout out Mark Few and Scott Drew. Scott Drew getting his first championship. Mark Few, what a class act. A guy that after the game in his post-game interview didn't talk about his team, didn't talk about the disappointment, none of that. Just said, wow, Baylor was amazing. They are amazing. They are unbelievable. Just gave all the credit in the world to Baylor. I thought that was just so humble and gracious of him. And Scott Drew, his first championship after turning this program around, a program that was not historically great. He came in and he's turned it around. So, shout out two of the greatest coaches in the game, and I can't wait for next year.
Yeah, especially what Baylor went through early 2000s, man, with that whole situation with their school, with the murder of Brian Dennehy and stuff like that. Remember, Baylor had a black mark on them for a long, long time. So for them to, you know, go from that to winning a national championship, it's pretty awesome. Before we get out of here, definitely got to, you know, name the all-tournament team. From the women's, we had Haley Jones from Stanford, who was also the most outstanding player. Ari McDonald from Arizona, Lexi Hall from Stanford, Zia Cook from South Carolina, and also Paige Beckers from UConn. And on the men's side, we got Johnny Juzang from UCLA, Davion Mitchell from Baylor, Jalen Suggs, and Drew Timmy from Gonzaga, and also your most outstanding player on the men's side of things was Jared Butler from Baylor. He had an amazing game, 22.7 rebounds and 3 assists. I think he was the first since Carmelo Anthony to have 20-7 in a game or whatever. So shout outs to them. Congrats to Baylor for winning. Congrats to Gonzaga on an amazing season. Congrats to Arizona on an amazing season. And congrats to Stanford for winning it all. And with that being said, we're about to get out of here. Thank you for listening to the NCAA show. Please, please subscribe to the podcast on Apple and Spotify. Also, don't forget to follow the other podcasts that we got going on, which is the NBA show, which is the WNBA show, the Daniel Artest podcast, Hoopers Unhailed, Off the Glass podcast, There's a lot of podcasters, all right? I'm sorry if I ain't naming everybody on the team. Y'all know I love you, all right? Think about it. When I signed with Manscaped, I gave everybody everything. And also to you, Asher, thank you for your contributions for this tournament, man. Looking forward to hopefully, you know, working with you some more of this. This was definitely fun. You know, you bringing your, you know, your expertise at only the age of 21, man. So, yeah, what's next for you, by the way, before we get out of here? What's next for you?
You know, I'm just going to keep grinding in the sports media thing. I really want to be a play-by-play guy. So any opportunities that come up in play-by-play, hopefully you'll be hearing me on some games on the call pretty soon in college basketball. I've done a lot of Wisconsin games. But, yeah, continuing to cover the Badgers, probably heading back to Los Angeles pretty soon. And, yeah, just trying to call games, grind away, and make a name for myself. And it was a pleasure being on with you guys, and I really enjoyed it. Thank you guys for having me. Loved having a space to talk about college basketball, and it's a great game, man. It's a great game.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you very much once again. And with that being said, love is love. We out of here. Peace.